Welcome to Canadian Politique. I'm Cameron Bishop.
I'm Leanne Goodman.
I'm Mike McDougall.
Today on the show, we're talking Ontario Conservative leader Doug Ford's plan to open up the Greenbelt to development, the 2018 White House Correspondents' Dinner, and of course, stop me if you've heard this one, our new series on stories that stood out to each of us this week. Also, next week on the pod, we're welcoming Richard Dean Winfield, who is the Democratic primary candidate in the Georgia 10th Congressional District, to talk about his Guaranteed Jobs platform. That, Mike, was a holdover from my stories of the week last week. So now we actually get to talk to the man himself. Anyhow, how are you guys? Leanne, how's your hip?
Great. Oh, yeah, I'm an invalid. But other than that, I'm great.
If only there were
barely move.
If only there were comfort care.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. Well, that was maybe a little too soon. Rest in peace, Barbara.
That's right.
I actually adore Barbara Bush. I want that to go on the record.
Yeah, we know.
Yeah, okay.
All right. We know.
Let's talk about Doug Ford and the Greenbelt. On Monday, video emerged of Ontario Progressive Conservative leader Doug Ford musing about opening up, quote, a big chunk of the Greenbelt to developers in order to drive housing prices down in the GTA. His thinking being that a greater supply of homes in the market will lead to lower costs to purchase a home. In his words, quote, this is my plan for affordable housing. For those who don't know, the Greenbelt permanently protected area of green space, farmland, forests, wetlands, and watersheds is actually located in southern Ontario. It surrounds a significant portion of Canada's most populated and fastest growing area called the Golden Horseshoe. It includes 800,000 acres of land protected by the Niagara Escarpment Plan and the Oak Ridges Moraine Conservation Plan, plus 1 million acres of land in the protected countryside overarching Greenbelt plan. These bureaucrats certainly do not know how to name things. That total makes this one of the largest and most successful Greenbelts in the world. Now, let's just hear from Doug Ford before we chat.
We will open up the Greenbelt, not all of it. We're going to open a big chunk of it up, and we're going to start building and making it more affordable and putting more houses out there. The demand for single-dwelling homes is huge. But no one can afford them. So we need to start building affordable housing. I've already talked to some of the biggest developers in this country. And again, I wish I could say it's my idea, but it was their idea as well. Give us property, we'll build, and we'll drive the cost down. That's my plan for affordable housing.
It's a big shock that developers want to tear up some pristine landscape. Good call, Doug.
Like, wow, could he make himself sound any dumber?
I don't know how he thinks. Now, is there a problem with affordable housing in Ontario? Sure. I mean, there's from 2016 data indicates that over 171,000 Ontario households are actually on the hunt for affordable housing. But guess what? Running down the Greenbelt with bulldozers and dump trucks is not going to build affordable housing. You're going to get the same millionaire Torontonians or Oakvillians or whatever the hell they call themselves building bigger houses and bigger yards and bigger everything out in the Greenbelt that's been redeveloped at the expense of the wetlands, ducks, poor ducks, while their million-dollar homes go up for sale for other people that can buy million-dollar homes. This will do nothing but placate his big donors.
Well, here's what I want to say as someone who spends a lot of time out there, because my aunt, who is really more like my mother, has owned a farm in the Caledon area for 50 years, right on the Oak Ridges Moraine. And here's what I have to say about Doug Ford. Please cover your ears if you don't like profanity. What a stupid fuck. Like, that's just honestly the worst idea. And that area where I spend a lot of time, it's totally Tory, PC country. I don't know if they've ever voted for a Liberal or NDP candidate where my aunt's riding is. And it is filled with people who hate the sprawl, who are big Greenbelt supporters. They don't want Torontonians coming up. There are too many of those subdivisions that are sort of creeping out and getting around some of the regulations, which they're loosening. Like, it's easier now for you to get out into some of those regions than it used to be, despite the Oak Ridges Moraine being there. And they hate it. So it's no wonder this was said privately and was not a public comment, because I can't imagine it. Well, I was going to say this should be the thing that sinks him. But Kathleen Wynne hatred is so irrational and so similar to Hillary Clinton hatred in this province that it probably won't sink him. And it should, because that is an absolute disaster of a policy idea.
And what is a big chunk? Like, what is that? Like, 100,000 acres? Is it 200,000 acres? I think that this could be like the 100,000 job cuts that Tim Hudak said in the 2014 election that sunk him. I mean, it could play out the exact same way, because as soon as I heard that, I was starting to think, you know what, Doug Ford, good guy. I mean, I don't agree with him. I don't know necessarily that I would vote for him, but you know,
Hudak, you mean?
I was thinking actually Doug Ford. I mean, I disagree with him on everything, but I mean, yes, in the sense that he's folksy, right? Like he's relatable. And then I heard that and I'm like, the hell are you talking about? Like, come on. It's such a bad idea. Mike?
This is the Doug Ford version of build a wall, right? And what I mean by that is this is protected land. It's not like the premier can just snap his fingers and bulldozers can start moving in. There's got to be some legislative changes that would have to happen in order to have the green belt designated for building houses. And it's like the reason I compare it to building the wall is it's something that Trump just said and everyone jumped on it. But now in practice, he's finding it extremely hard to do because one man can't make that decision. This is the same thing. Tearing down the green belt to build houses is not something that Doug Ford can decide to do. So it's just an empty promise that is supposed to grab headlines. That's all it is.
Well, you know,
this weird quote too. I support the green belt in a big way. Really? And then the one other weird thing he said is anything that we will look at on the green belt will be replaced, so there will still be an equal amount of green belt. Like what? Is he saying? So that if you build on the green belt, you'll protect another 100 acres further north? Like what is he saying? And also the green belt is where it is for ecological reasons. It's not like you can just, you know,
make a new green belt.
There's aquifers and there's watersheds. It's not that you can just decide, well, I think we'll move the green belt over here. Like, it's just so dumb on so many fronts, I can't even,
Downtown urban ridings of Toronto will soon be replaced by wetlands, ducks, maybe a few moose and a beaver, all because of Doug Ford's development plan.
You don't get to decide where the ecologically sensitive areas are. It's just so dumb.
You also don't get to decide where people want to live.
No.
Everybody who lives up in there will tell you, hey, Toronto, build more high-rises. Stay the hell out of our backyard. We don't want you people here. Like, there's already too many of you. Get away. Go back down to the city. So you want affordable housing? Free up some of these condo buildings that are going up like gangbusters in Toronto. Like, it's a skyline of cranes. You know, delegate them as affordable housing. Like, have rent controls in some of those buildings. Like, don't sell them. Rent them out.
I'll tell you what really concerns me, and this is where I kind of worry about a Doug Ford coming in, because maybe he's looked at data. I don't think so. I'm thinking that he kind of just spewed it out. But survey data released on Monday by the Ontario Real Estate Association says that 91% of individuals aged 25 to 34 believe owning a home is a smart financial investment. That's fine. Who would disagree with that? But 70% of those in that age bracket agree that buying a home in their neighborhood is unaffordable. 70% of the total survey respondents of 2,100 said that they believe the government needs to do more to help them afford a home. And among millennials, housing affordability ranked close to the environment in terms of community concerns, 81% to 83.1%. So I worry that he's tapping in to a vein that easily will sway some millennials who are looking at their bank accounts from their parents' basements and wondering, hey, maybe Doug Ford and his big promise to knock down some trees and kill some ducks is going to get me a bigger home or get me out of this mess that I'm in. It's not. I mean, even let's boil it right down. Look at the average.
But they want to live downtown Toronto. They don't want to live out in freaking East Gwillimbury.
No,
you're 100. Yeah.
You know, I have kids in that boat. I have a 27 and a 22-year-old, and I know I sound very young, but I do.
I thought those were your brothers and sisters.
No, they are my children. I started birthing at 12.
Oh.
And they don't want to live out in the boons. They want to live in downtown Toronto. They want affordable housing. They want to be able to afford to buy a home or a condo in the city in which they work and live and socialize. And that is what governments need to address. The answer isn't to try to pave over, you know, Aurora and beyond. It's just so dumb.
I can add on to that as well. As someone, I purchased a home last year, and we did pay more than we could have if we moved outside of the city, but we chose to buy where we bought because we wanted location. I'm not moving to Kings County or wherever the hell Doug Ford wants me to move to afford a house. I want to live in Toronto, and that's my choice. And, you know, Doug Ford's not going to entice me to move far away for, you know, by building a house that I can afford out there. Because if I wanted to live out there, I'd move out there.
Can I just say, I think a really important point here is the actual prices of homes. So let's just look at three. In Toronto, the average price of a home is around $768,000. In Ottawa, it's $403,900. In Sudbury, it's $254,000. I'll tell you something. Before you start knocking down trees, Mr. Ford, and killing wildlife and paving paradise and put up a parking lot, that's my reference to pop culture, you know, you should, what they should really be doing is looking at how we build some of these rural and remote communities that have affordable home prices and stop channeling provincial and federal jobs, frankly, in major urban municipalities. That's why all of these other areas have more affordable housing, because people are moving out of there. So move people back in there, help them get into the housing market, put some good jobs up there and reinvigorate those economies. Though this does not always have to be Ottawa, Toronto. Do not have to be the ground zero of where all the provincial and federal jobs are located, because at the end of the day, why on earth would we expect the private sector to invest in jobs and growth in rural and remote communities when all the provincial and federal governments are doing is actually just band-aid solutions designed to make sure that they don't completely collapse on themselves as they're shipping jobs down south?
Very good point.
That's just,
bring on Elliot Lake.
Well, I just, you know, and look at it, I mean, there's lots of great communities up there with lots to offer. But, you know, if all you're doing is giving people the option to live in downtown Toronto and because, you know, that's an easier place.
That's where all the jobs are.
Yeah.
Well, and that's where a lot of the, like, especially the tech jobs, right? Like the tech explosion that Toronto's experiencing right now, that's putting pressure on the housing market.
Like if I were Amazon, when they were looking for their headquarters, I know that they needed a population base. I think, wasn't it around 500,000 or a million people or whatever? But you look at some of these communities, and it's not just in Ontario, but across the country, where there is a lot of affordable housing there, where the communities are dying out, where young people, you know, they'd like to stay in the community, but there's no opportunity. And I look at some of these big companies that are announcing jobs, including that Amazon announced 3,000 new jobs in Vancouver the other day. The Prime Minister was there. Why can't those jobs go to a place like Sudbury? Why can't those jobs go to a place like Brandon, Manitoba, or, you know, St. John's, Newfoundland, or what have you? What are we doing wrong in government? You know, it's fine and well to crow about affordable housing and the lack of affordability therein, but what are we doing to promote these businesses going in and rebuilding these communities that have often been shuttered because there's been a decline in the agricultural sector or the manufacturing base or what have you? They're shuttering up, and the governments are doing absolutely nothing to help. And I shouldn't say that. That's a gross generalization. But I think that they're doing the bare minimum to assist these places to rebuild. If anything, it'll just...
Well, the problem is these companies don't want to be in those places, and we're sort of at mercy. You know, if we're trying to get Amazon here, Amazon doesn't want to be in Sudbury. I hate to say it, but they don't.
But why?
Because it's hard to get there. There's no direct flights. You've got to connect to get there. There's no finance there. Do you know what I mean?
So then
there's
we need to have a conversation about infrastructure.
I agree.
Yeah.
I agree, but it's 20 years away, right?
Right.
And we need to have high-speed trains. We need to have all sorts of things that are not in place yet. So Amazon is such a huge company that we'd be lucky to get Amazon coming here, so we can't sort of start making conditions about, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like,
Amazon's going nowhere that doesn't have an international airport,
right?
Right. They need to be able to get on a plane and go anywhere in the world when they need to go.
Yeah. So it's complicated. And
it's a vicious circle.
What do we start? Well, and what do? We start saying, well, no, sorry, we don't want your jobs and your investment. And, you know, we don't want you taking advantage of our, you know, expertise in artificial intelligence, which is supposed to be, we're top of the world now in that field, because you won't go to Sudbury. We can't. How do you do it? You can't do it.
Well, Leanne, I
totally agree with what you're saying. How about government jobs? How about putting more federal government jobs in those places?
Well, Leanne, right? I know a special place in northern BC called Terrace where the entire council would very, very much welcome some investment in some of their acres and acres and acres of empty industrial parkland. Food for thought.
Yeah.
free business tip here on Canadian politique. But it is true. You're right. It is a 20-year, 30-year plan. But the first step to getting there is relocating some of these federal and provincial jobs and building up the infrastructure around them so that they can actually meet the demands of a growing economy. And we're not going to get there.
Absolutely.
I would just say one other thing, and that is about affordable housing. You mentioned with your kids wanting to have, and Mike, you mentioned as well in terms of where you could afford. I think the reality, though, is when people talk about affordable housing, they mean it as affordable housing for low-income folks. And I'm not too sure that that's the best way to define it. Affordable housing has to be broad enough to include, you know, those individuals just starting out. I mean, there's a home buyer protection plan.
Aspiring homeowners.
Exactly.
Right. Aspiring homeowners, not kids, not people who are low-income.
Right, because right now affordable housing equals social housing.
Absolutely. And you can't, even if you're making a huge salary in Toronto, if you're on your own, you're not buying a house here. And it's just too hard to do. I'm watching houses around me that are just like, pardon my language again, shitholes that people are paying $1.5 million for. And then they're putting in another $200,000, $300,000 in work once they've renovated them. I don't understand where people are getting the money. But I think banks are irresponsible to be mortgaging people to the eyeballs. But that's what's going on in Toronto. And like, you've got to be in a, you have to be in a two income household where you're making well over $200,000 to be able to afford to comfortably buy a house here, unless you want to just have absolutely no life.
No,
and
I agree.
Higher income is going to your mortgage payment.
Mike,
so I don't get it, but you're right. You're right. It's not social housing. It's housing that kids, you know, people that are making a decent wage should be able to afford to buy into.
Well, they can't.
Like even condos are getting priced out of reach now.
Yeah.
And there's enough of them, which is go back to my argument. Those, all of these developers that are building these condos, and there are more and more of them, thanks to Wynn, by the way, who's been good on this front, despite the whole province hating her guts. There's more and more co-op housing and buildings being designated as rental only. So there are ways to do it without paving over the greenbelt. And you really think he's folksy?
You know what? I do.
Those bad veneers.
I'm not saying I'd vote for him. I'm not saying I'd vote for him, but there's something likable. Although, you know, I get it. Like, I get, look, I'm full disclosure. I'm torn right now between the NDP and the Liberals. I'm probably one of those ones that I respect Kathleen Wynne, but I also agree that it's probably time for a timeout. For the whole party, because I think they've been in there too long. So I'd probably give, right now, the edge would probably be, as a progressive voter, I'd probably give it to Andrea Horvath. And we'll see where that goes. But I like the fact, I mean, you know, Doug Ford talks a little bit like the average guy, like me. He talks like all of us. You could see yourself going out for a beer.
He talks like no one I know. Why do you say that?
He talks like me. Doug Ford.
He does not.
He does. He sounds like somebody that you'd meet at a bar or a grocery store or whatever.
Yeah, bar, pissed at the end of the night, wondering if
you don't
can get
you
some.
Don't make the guy you meet at the bar the premier.
No,
I don't think so either. But apparently, that's what George W. Bush had, and maybe that's why Cameron liked him too. I remember people saying that about W. Oh, you know, he's the kind of guy you want to have a beer with. I'm sorry, I don't want somebody who I'm going to be sitting in a bar at the end of the night with boozing to be leading. I would like an intellectual, but I know, no intellectuals.
Well,
no intellectuals. Smart people are evil.
I love this. All I said was he's folksy. I'm not voting for the man. I'm just saying that he's kind of likable. You can see yourself talking over the back fence with him. You're having a little chat. He comes over for a barbecue. You know he brings, like, good sausage and some good beer.
You know what I'd be saying over the back fence to him?
What?
Get away from me. Go back into your kitchen. You disgust me, and I don't want to speak to you.
Boy, the block party would be a real disaster then, Leanne. All right. On that happy note, let's go where else but the United States, where this past weekend the annual White House Correspondents Association dinner was held in Washington. And if you hear Republicans and establishment media talk about it, you'd think that it was the end of the world and the end of the civilized world. Because Michelle Wolf, a comedian, headlined the event, and she has since been attacked since her monologue on Saturday for making jokes about Sarah Huckabee Sanders, the White House press secretary, for being crass and rude towards individuals across all forms of the political spectrum and to disrespecting this president. Yes, really. So we've got just a mashup of some of the jokes. Let's listen.
It is kind of crazy. campaign was in contact with Russia when the Hillary campaign wasn't even in contact with Michigan.
It's a direct flight. It's so close.
Of course, Trump isn't here, if you haven't noticed. He's not here. And I know I would drag him here myself, but it turns out the President of the United States is the one pussy you're not allowed to grab. A lot of people want Trump to be impeached. I do not. Because just when you think Trump is awful, you remember Mike Pence. Mike Pence is what happens when Anderson Cooper isn't gay. Mike Pence is the kind of guy that brushes his teeth and then drinks orange juice and thinks, Mike Pence is also very anti-choice. He thinks abortion is murder, which, first of all, don't knock it till you try it. And when you do try it, really knock it. You know, you got to get that baby out of there. And yeah, sure, you can groan all you want. I know a lot of you are very anti-abortion, you know, unless it's the one you got for your secret mistress. I'm 32 years old, which is an odd age, 10 years too young to host this event, and 20 years too old for Roy Moore. We are graced with Sarah's presence tonight. I have to say, I'm a little starstruck. I love you as Aunt Lydia in The Handmaid's Tale. Mike Pence, if you haven't seen it, you would love it. Every time Sarah steps up to the podium, I get excited because I'm not really sure what we're going to get. You know, a press briefing, a bunch of lies, or divided into softball teams. It's shirts and skins, and this time don't be such a little bitch, Jim Acosta. And I'm never really sure what to call Sarah Huckabee Sanders. You know, is it Sarah Sanders? Is it Sarah Huckabee Sanders? Is it Cousin Huckabee? Is it Auntie Huckabee Sanders? Like, what's Uncle Tom but for white women who disappoint other white women? Oh, I know, Aunt Coulter. I actually really like Sarah. I think she's very resourceful. Like, she burns facts. And then she uses that ash to create a perfect smoky eye. Like, maybe she's born with it. Maybe it's lies. It's probably lies. Yep, kiddos, this is who you're getting tonight. I'm going to skip a lot of the normal pleasantries. We're at a Hilton. It's not nice. This is on C-SPAN. No one watches that. Trump is president. It's not ideal. White House Correspondents Association, thank you for having me. The monkfish was fine. And just a reminder to everyone, I'm here to make jokes. I have no agenda. I'm not trying to get anything accomplished. So everyone that's here from Congress, you should feel right at home.
Awesome.
So this is supposedly the end of the Republic, as everybody knows it. Just absolutely. And all the Washington folks, all the Washington insiders, the elite, as some of the Trump folks said, they stormed out early. Although those same Trump people who apparently stormed out of the White House Correspondents Association dinner in protest actually showed up at the after parties right after, which is quite humorous. But this, of course,
what a brave protest, a very brave protest.
Brave protest. Leanne, you have been to the White House Correspondents Association dinner. Is it really an event celebrating the First Amendment and the importance of journalism in the country?
It's just a party. The year I really had a bad year because you know who was the comedian the year I went?
Who?
Jay Leno. And he was lame. Jay Leno. And it was so lame. But like a couple of years prior to that, Stephen Colbert did it. And he just ripped on George W. Bush. And that caused a bit of a controversy. But honestly, don't hire comedians if you don't want them to make nasty jokes. Like, it's like the Ricky Gervais thing with the People's Choice Awards. Remember that?
Yeah.
And did she say anything that was, well, except I guess if you're anti-abortion, I guess the abortion joke didn't go over so well, but everything else was fine. What was the problem? I don't understand the outrage about her performance, and part of me thinks it's slightly misogynist.
I think so too.
Having said that, however, is that women are going at her harder than like Maggie from the New York Times and Andrea Mitchell. Why are they going after her? Sarah Saunders Huckabee does lie every day, and they weren't insulting her. She wasn't insulting her look. She's insulting, if she wasn't even insulting. She was making a comment about her smoky eye makeup application, which I've quite honestly admired that she comes out every day with those perfectly applied smoky eyes. Anyway, I don't get the big deal.
Well, Maggie Haberman's the New York Times reporter that's going on about, you know, about the looks. And what Maggie Haberman is attached to is the softball coach reference, which I think she's stretching. But Maggie Haberman, she's a very good reporter, and she does the Trump beat for the New York Times. But she tries really hard on Twitter, I find, to look like she's playing both sides, that she's impartial. But sometimes I find when she's trying to be, you know, I wouldn't say pro-Trump, but not against Trump, she's just pulling stuff out of the air just to make, it's almost like she has to do like 30 tweets a day, 15 have to be for the Democrats and 15 for the Republican. And that was just one of her Democrat tweets.
Well, I'm sorry, but it's not the job of the media to be impartial. It's the job of the media to give the facts and let other people figure it out. And that's the thing. This is what people hate about places like Ottawa. We have Politics in the Pen. I'm going to be going to that next week. The White House Correspondents Association dinner in Washington, people palling around journalists and politicians. And then they wonder why everybody's upset when they're sucking and blowing, because they go to these things, they party together, they have a good laugh. Then, you know, the next day on the Monday, one politician dumps on a journalist because they think that they're being biased on one way or the other. So the fact is that in exchange for access, these individuals try and straddle that middle ground and walk this tight wire of what they think is impartial. Well, nobody's asking for your impartiality. All we want you to do is present the facts. And facts are neither partial or impartial. They are facts, and they will not, they will lead people to the right conclusion. Your job is not to kiss ass for access. And Maggie Haberman, I agree with you. She is a great reporter. But only last week, Trump called her a third-rate reporter, dumped all over her. So do I really think she's being sincere when she's crapping all over Michelle Wolf about Sarah Huckabee Sanders and her burnt eyeshadow of lies? Not really. I think she's hoping the president sees her tweets and will pick up the phone and start ranting to her. She's had access all over the place, but it's really offensive that they would come out and say, after, you know, everything we've heard from Trump, Mexicans are rapists and murderers, grabbed them by the pussy, moved on her like a bitch, insults everybody, Little Marco, Lion Ted Cruz, Sleepy-Eyed Chuck Todd, Mr. Magoo, Jeff Sessions, blood coming out of her wherever.
The imitation of the handicapped reporter.
Yeah. And yet, the White House and Sarah Huckabee Sanders, or Aunt Lydia Huckabee, or whatever the hell we want to call her, sitting up there rolling her eyes and looking like she's choking down nails. Hey, Sarah, don't fucking lie all the time. How about that? How about you start there? How about you have some fucking integrity? And you too, Kellyanne and Conway. But before we get any further in my rant, I want to roll this clip that was on the other day. CNN had it. And it's just a quick clip of insults, just to remind people about all these nervous Nellies, these hand wringers of propriety, who are so upset about a comedian in an 18-minute set, but are completely fine defending this.
We have some sound just to remind people of what the president has said
in
the past, that things that were not part of a comedy routine. Listen.
I don't know what I said. I don't remember.
Well, Rosie O'Donnell's disgusting. I mean, both inside and out. You take a look at her, she's a slob.
He's a war
hero. 5.5 years.
He's a war hero because he was captured. I like people that weren't captured, okay? I hate to tell you.
Jeb Bush is a low energy person. For him to get things done is hard.
Maxine Waters, a very low IQ individual.
We have a representative in Congress who they say was here a long time ago. They call her Pocahontas.
Yep. These are the people who are so offended by a comedian, a feminist comedian, but they're completely fine with president grab them by the pussy and bleeding out of her wherever, and Mexicans are rapists and murderers and moved on her like a bitch and whatever else. So upset. This is the end of democracy, apparently, in the United States, the White House Correspondents Association dinner.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. And it's that it's conservatives who are clutching their pearls. I'm sorry. How about the president? How about that guy?
Yeah. I mean, all these people that are clutching pearls will also be on those cable news shows, on the panels, yelling at other people, talking about and defending the president paying off a porn star, the president lying and possibly colluding with a foreign power to win an election, cheating on his wife when she was pregnant, and then after she'd had a baby with having unprotected sex with porn stars or what have you.
Yeah, that's okay.
But I thought one thing that was really interesting that Michelle Wolf said at the end of her monologue, she said two things. One, which I thought was great, on the World Outside of the White House Correspondents' Dinner, she said Flint still doesn't have clean water. Flint, Michigan, of course. You know, all the poor communities in Michigan have terrible, well, Flint, Michigan, rather, have terrible water quality ridden with lead. And, of course, the Republican governor there has done squat all. But on the media, she said something that I thought was very good. And Trump himself has said this in some way, shape or form. She said, "You guys are obsessed with Trump. Did you used to date him? Because you pretend like you hate him, but I think you love him. And I think what no one in this room wants to admit is that Trump has helped all of you. He couldn't sell steaks or vodka or water or college or ties or Eric, but he has helped you. He's helped you sell your papers and your books and your TV. True. You helped create this monster, and now you're profiting off of him. And if you're going to profit off of Trump, you should at least give him some money because he doesn't have any." But it's true. He said it himself. He said, "Oh, you know, all these people are dumping on me now, but come 2020, they're gonna be covering me left and right because you know why? They need the ratings."
Of course. No, come on. You see, this is where I disagree. You've got to cover the president of the United States running for real. You can't not cover this stuff. Like it just has happened. So happened that the world has become enthralled with Trump. And
enthralled.
He's such an insane lunatic that the writing, well, not, I don't mean that necessarily in a positive way, but it's hard to not pay attention to the lunatic.
But how much free advertising?
That's right.
How much free advertising did Trump get during the primaries, right? I mean, that's all people wanted to cover was Donald Trump. The media elected Donald Trump.
But it was because he was insane. And you can't not cover an insane person running for office. Like, I don't dispute that the ratings followed and the ratings went crazy. But you can't not cover somebody running for president who is talking about building a wall and calling Mexicans rapists. You cannot not cover that.
You can make an editorial choice. I mean, look at how many people run in elections now in high profile races that get no coverage. Now, granted, I know that media.
Yeah, but they're not running for president.
But you have to.
Bernie Sanders got a shitload of coverage. Like people who run for president, whether we like it or not, regardless of what we think about them personally, they're going to get blanket coverage. That's just the way it works. And unfortunately, he was the one who was saying the most insane things, and he was drowning out, you know, Hillary, who would come out with a policy announcement on the day where he's claiming that Mexicans are all rapists. It's about what people are paying attention to. If more people are clicking on the crazy thing he said, because it's crazy. I mean, what do we spend a big portion of this podcast talking about? What a lunatic he is.
Of course.
And,
yes.
Right? So
shit, well, I'm helping elect Donald Trump. Great.
No, you're not. But it's just, you can't. Then you're into censorship. Then you start not covering him because you don't like what he's saying. Then you're getting into censorship. You have to put it all out there.
But Leanne, does he need an hour and 15 minutes? Like he's decrying, and the White House is decrying, the White House Correspondents Association dinner. Meanwhile, President Fatass is down in Michigan delivering an hour and a half tirade about Mexicans, about Hillary with lock her up rallies. This was just on the same Saturday, just a litany of venom coming out of this man's mouth. Why does the media have to cover that entire speech? Why not say, well, you know what? The president's not saying anything new. We've heard it before. We're going to cut to another story.
Well, I think they do break away now. I think CNN breaks away from them now. Like, you are seeing that happen more often. But because he's crazy, you kind of can't not run it, right? Like, you know he's going to say something nuts. This is a guy who's facing down impeachment. You can't not cover him, regardless of how offensive.
You can't not cover it, but the media tries to be impartial when they cover it, and that's the worst part. You don't have to. You know, I know there's journalistic ethics, but we're talking here about, you know, he's crazy and he's racist and he says all these crazy things. Cover it like that. What they do, though, is they cover, like, the president today held a rally for supporters.
Well, they play
the
headline, it straight. They try
the headline
to play
should
it straight.
Be the president
yes.
got real crazy today and said a bunch of racist shit in Michigan. Like, that would be how I'd cover it. That's the story.
I think I heard on another pod, and I thought it was right. They said, you know, with the Republicans, they have gamed the refs really, really well. And so to such an extent that the media is very, again, very aware of their need to be impartial and to make sure that they don't lack access.
But do you
access.
Guys really find that the media is being impartial towards Trump? Like, I find that the media is going harder on him than I've ever seen any mass media go against a politician. Like, he complains about it all the time. Like,
but
he
they're going
right,
hard.
It's always fake news, fake news, fake news, fake news, because every story is negative. Like, I really have not found at all that the media is going easy on Donald Trump.
Let me give you this,
like,
though. So
we
during
about
the
all
election,
these scandals because they've broken all these scandals, right?
They've
dug deep to try to get stuff on them. I don't
look at,
buy that.
I don't have the stats in front of me, and I'm too lazy to look them up right now while we record. But if you look at, you know, you're right, Donald Trump has had many, many scandals. But during the election, to be impartial, they wanted to cover Hillary Clinton's scandals as well. And the only thing they had was the emails. If you look at how much airtime was spent on Hillary Clinton's frickin' emails that were caused because she's an old woman that didn't know how to use an email server. They would have spent hours on those goddamn emails on Mexicans are rapists. They spent, how long do you honestly think they spent on it? 2 days?
Because something else happened. I don't dispute that too much attention was paid to Hillary Clinton's emails. I do not dispute that. But there was a crush every day of stories about Trump being a lunatic and an asshole. And the Russian stuff was coming out before he was even elected. Like, there was a real push. And I know people in American newsrooms who were really trying to get the goods on that guy. So I kind of dispute this whole narrative that the media has been easy on Donald Trump.
Well, the kiss,
I mean, he sure doesn't think so.
The kiss asses in the established media, though, that are dumping on this comedian should get a life. I think Jimmy Kimmel had it right. If they don't like it, hire a juggler.
Well, I agree. And also, the one thing you said about Maggie Haberman, why can I never get her name? Is it Haberman or Haberman? Anyway, I don't think that she is consciously trying to kiss Trump's ass by going after the comedian. But I do think when you're on the front lines of a big story like that, and you're always the one who's breaking, like, you know, she's breaking two or three stories a week that are really damning stories about him, right? You do start to feel, because you're getting so much shit all the time from the left, the right wing lunatics who are hounding you on media. You do feel like you have to go out of your way to be, to give, you know, to be, in her case, to defend Sarah Saunders.
To balance the scales.
I'm not saying it was the right thing to do. Well, I'm sure she goes home every night, as you do as a journalist, and thinks to herself, God, am I being too, do I look like a real, like I'm in the tank? Are they right? Do I have a bias against Trump? And you try to, you want to make sure that you're not looking like you do. You know what I mean? I can kind of get, even though I disagree with her, I get the sensitivity as a reporter on the front lines when you're constantly getting attacked and accused of having a bias, that you get defensive and you want to show people, hey, you know what? No, I thought this was a shitty joke to make about hers. And she's with Trump, so see?
Well, it was not a shitty joke.
I agree.
Sarah Huckabee Sanders does have beautiful smoky eyes. And I'd go with more. Her red lips are from the blood of Mexicans who have been deported back to their homeland and killed. So she has lies for eyeshadow and the blood of children on her lips. We love you, Aunt Lydia Huckabee. By the way, Aunt Lydia Huckabee, or Aunt Lydia, of course, in The Handmaid's Tale, is the nastiest woman. She's the enforcer, this matronly woman who basically beats and coerces these handmaidens into submission. So that, I think that's a very apt description of Sarah Huckabee Sanders.
That was a very funny line if you watch that show, because she's evil, that woman.
She is, and so is Sarah. But, of course, I did read she does start every press briefing with a prayer and a devotion before she goes out. I don't know who her God is, but he must tell a lot of lies.
She does have a brother who tortured the family dog. Remember that?
Yep.
The opening scene of episode 1 of season 2 of The Handmaid's Tale is some good TV, if anyone hasn't seen it yet.
I gotta watch.
Oh,
thank you.
Oh, it's good.
Okay, lastly today, let's talk about the stories of the week. Our new series, Stop Me If You've Heard This One. Leanne, you get to go first.
Okay, this isn't really political, but
even
we're talking about TV shows, I binge watch, because I'm an invalid at the moment, the Netflix reboot of Queer Eye. And if you have not done that, I highly recommend you do it. It is so good. And it does actually get political. At one point, they have to take out a Trump voting NASCAR driving cop from the southern U.S. and make him over. And it's tense because one of the guys is, he's a black gay guy. And they have this joke that is really terrible when they pull over the van as though they're going to, apprehend this black guy. And it's tense. And it's really, really good. They are such kind-hearted, decent people, these five guys. And every episode, you cry and you feel a little better about humanity, especially in a time like now when everything is so divided. It's a really great show. So don't miss it.
Awesome.
Watch it.
All right. Well, I hope they do a session on Mike Pence. That'd be a great makeover.
Well, they you wouldn't believe the people they make over, Christian Bible thumpers, and it's really good.
And how do these Bible thumpers react after the fact? Are they uncomfortable?
I think every person at the end of the show basically told the Fab Five, as they're called, how much they love them and how their views had changed about not just homosexuality, but all sorts of things. Because they're really, really nice people. And they really love each other, and it's just all positive. You couldn't spend any time with these five guys without kind of falling in love with them yourself. So it's a really uplifting show. I highly recommend it in these terrible, divisive, and dark times.
Seeing people as people, that is a great concept. Okay, Mike.
Yep.
Trump, what's your story?
I just wanted to briefly discuss, I know that it's starting to make the rounds right now. We're looking at what's going on in the Koreas with the reunification possibly happening. There was a meeting last week between President Moon and I don't know if he's called President.
No, the big leader, the grand
the
leader.
The
grand poobah. And the narrative of the story is that Donald Trump deserves a Nobel Peace Prize. And, well, here's the thing. If I'm being honest, and I posted something last week where I wrote, if Obama got a Nobel Peace Prize, then Trump deserves one too, because even Obama himself has commented that he doesn't know why he got a Nobel Peace Prize. He doesn't know what it was for. Interestingly enough, this week, President Moon said, if Trump wants the prize, just give it to him. I just want peace, which I thought was a masterful line from a president of a foreign nation to kind of play into Trump's ego. But I think really what I wanted to talk about was, if this is a story, given Trump the Nobel Prize, I'd give it to him. But I'd be very cautious with this story as to what is going on in the two Koreas. I don't know if I believe the narrative that everyone's friends now. And, everyone seems to want to talk about this Nobel Prize. And I think it's because how ridiculous it would be if Donald Trump actually won a Nobel Peace Prize. But my comment on that is just give it to him and let's actually pay attention to what is going on in Korea, because I'm not buying any of it.
No, you have to believe that Kim Jong-un, that portly little porcine
crazy
guy with the bad hair and the high-heeled boots and those terrible Mao suits, there's somebody that the Queer Eye can pick up and make over. I think that'd be a good one. Good episode. Do it right in the DMZ. Have him run across and see if he steps on a landmine first. But he does not... he's not to be trusted. And let's be clear, he's already got nuclear weapons. He's not going to denuke. Are you kidding me? He's not going to get rid of nuclear weapons. And he's certainly not going to get rid of the tech. Even if he did, he's certainly not going to get rid of the know-how to build them. He's not. He's looking for respectability on the world stage. And this fat little man who has gunned down his own relatives with anti-aircraft guns and whose parent, whose people are starving. Had his uncle assassinated, killed his own brother. This is not a man you deal with. And fat ass President Trump is going to go to the DMZ and try and make peace with this guy. At the same time, he's already musing, Trump is, about scuttling the Iran nuclear deal. So let me get this straight. He's going to cut a deal on nukes with North Korea, but scrapping the deal made with Iran on not pursuing nuclear weapons? How does that work? How does that build trust?
Well, there's also a story that broke that the processing plant for the uranium that North Korea is using for the nuclear weapons may have exploded. So No, well, I mean, it's breaking. It's hard to get news out of that country. But there's one theory that, you know, his nuclear weapons production capabilities have imploded on him. So this is the natural next step, is to, you know, make peace where you can, right?
Yeah, and also that he's just grossly exaggerated the capacity that he has. Like, it's all been bullshit, and right? And China is the big puppet master in this whole thing. And does China want Trump taking credit for this? No.
That might be the plan, right? Though. Just give him the shiny object, give him the peace prize, and let Asia deal with Asian politics. Like, that might
well
be the strategy.
The European elites, I'd like to think, are never, and I use that term, European elites. That's a shout out to you, Andrew Scheer. You standing outside a phone booth, hoping people would meet with you while you were in London, but the quote European elites, as the sheer Tories would like to refer to them, will probably never give Donald Trump the Nobel Peace Prize. One can hope.
No.
And he had as much to do about peace in the Koreas with his tweets and his insults as I do, you know, on anything that happens in the world.
Funny you should mention this, because I am commissioning a piece just today at the Conversation Canada for somebody to tell me what the hell is really going on with this Korea thing. So, Mike, I will send it to you.
Yeah, you got to pay me, though.
I am a China expert.
Well, okay. We will put up Leanne's column on the blog or on the Facebook page. And I have a story, too. And that is, so Donald Trump is finally going to the United Kingdom on Friday, July the 13th for a one-day visit. And there is a campaign on to make American Idiot by Green Day the number one song in the UK to coincide with the same day Trump arrives. So those who want, and we do have a number of listeners from the United Kingdom, so those of you who want to get involved, we urge you to download and stream Green Day's American Idiot between the dates of Friday, July the 6th and Thursday, July the 12th. At the time of writing, the group's Facebook page for this campaign has over 13,000 likes, and with shares of the page over 11,000. So this is a great opportunity to send a message through the airwaves to the fattest man in the Western world, who controls nuclear weapons and thinks he deserves a Nobel Peace Prize. If I could paraphrase him, download that song and move on him like a bitch. So that right. is what greets him at the airport when an Air Force One touches down on July 13th.
I like it.
Well, folks, thanks for a great week, and we will talk next week. In the meantime, Leanne, take care of that hip.
Everybody tune into Queer Eye. Yes, I'm hobbling around like an old woman. Bye.
Bye.
Bye.